Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to another edition of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. And today, kids, we get a fun day ahead of us. I get a chance to marry a few of my passions. We get to talk about the paranormal. We get to talk pop culture. And as I promised, today we're going to talk about a way that's going to save some lives. And this is really important. You know that when I talk to you guys about this and I say we have an important show, we've got an important topic, I mean it. And I get so many great emails from people after they listen to those episodes. And this one promises to deliver. Joining us today on the show, it's a real treat to have with us Anson Williams. You remember him as Potsy Weber on TV's Happy Days. He's here to talk with us about his career on Happy Days, some of the interesting paranormal aspects of his life, and as I said, something that's going to help save lives after you hear today's show. Anson, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
It's a great pleasure. I've had a chance to talk with you a couple times off air and on the Tom Bernard show, and what a fascinating life. I mean, geez, to be a part of a show that is so deeply rooted in pop culture and that people have such fond memories of. I mean, there are great shows that have stood the test of time, but a lot of them feel dated and worn when you watch them now. Happy Days really still has that same kind of wonder and delight. Even my children, which I've got a span between the age of 5 to 30 at this point and 34.
Oh, you're like me.
Right. And we've got a big family, but they all still love the aspects. It's a fun family show. It's funny. It's charming. It's a great product. But you were telling me before that that wasn't the first incarnation of Happy Days. It actually had tried to start off or boot up at one point and didn't make it. What happened with that?
Well, a year before, they had a pilot, but this particular pilot, Fonzie wasn't created, Ralphie wasn't created, Mr. Cunningham was played by Harold Gould, there was a different Joni. The only original cast members were Ron Howard, Marion Ross, and myself. And Gary Marshall had written a much softer version of Happy Days, more like the summer of 42. It was about getting the first television set on the block. Very soft, very good, but nothing like the Happy Days that came about. And, you know, we were promised that it looks real good, it's going to sell, it looks real good. Well, it didn't sell. They aired it on Love American Style, you know, to get some of their money back, but it didn't sell, and that was that. And I went off to, get other work, whatever I could do. I was up in San Francisco, in the Tiburon area, and I was acting in a Hallmark special called Lisa Bright and Dark with Kay Lenz, and I get a call that they're going to do another Happy Days pilot. And that's because American Graffiti had come out and was a huge hit. Grease had gone on Broadway, was a huge hit. So they decided to try it again, but this time, you know, more in the tone of Graffiti. So we did a second pilot. It's funny that Don Most was, tried out. Well, by the way, they just didn't give us the parts again. We had a screen test. We thought we might be too old.
Oh, really?
That's a whole other nightmare. And I mean, there were so many people they screen tested, and one was Don Most, and he screen tested for Potsy, but they liked him so much they created the character of Ralph for him, and then the character of Fonzie was just a very minor little character, and it was between Henry Winkler and Mickey Dolenz, and two totally different types, and thank goodness they gave it to Henry, who invented the character.
Right, no slight on Mickey Dolenz, but yeah, I just don't see the show having been Happy Days with Mickey behind the wheel of Fonzie.
Well, it would have been a more funny kind of, you know, on the nose kind of portrayal. Henry created this unique, very unique, you know, forever iconic character that just it caught the imagination of the world and the heart of the world. But Henry got it, very small part. Of course, that exploded. But this time, they were also looking for another Joni because they didn't want the girl they had during the last pilot. And I, in the film I had just completed with Kay Lenz, Erin Moran was playing her younger sister. So I, when they were casting, I recommended Erin, and she got the part. So it all came together, and thank goodness the first pilot didn't sell because we never would have made it. So timing's everything, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, did I read this correctly? At some point, Gary Marshall had actually wanted to pose the show sometime in the 30s or 40s?
Yeah, I think it's – well, I was never involved at that point. I guess in their development of it, they were thinking of all sorts of different, you know, times. But then they felt that because – but that was way back during the – before the first pilot. The second pilot was definitely going to be 50s, definitely that period, definitely graffiti-like, definitely Grease-like. And the reason I think it still it just rings so true and never gets old is because it always was old. It was always, you know, it was always that period that
no, you're right.
will forever be.
Yeah, that's
and,
a great point.
Yeah, so it's pretty timeless.
When I've got to ask, all right, I understand nicknames and everything, but did Gary Marshall ever explain to you what a Potsy was?
That's so funny. You know, it's if you think about names on the show, Gary really had a marketing head or really understood human nature. Richie, Potsy, Fonzie, Ralphie, Chachi, Mr. C, Mrs. C, right? There's almost a rhythm and a rhyme to the names. And as far as Potsy, I believe that his wife went to high school with a kid and for some reason was nicknamed Potsy. And he just liked the name. He just thought it was a cool name for the character. And that's pretty much how it came about.
Oh, that's cool. It's great that they're able to pull from different aspects of their life and put together the show. Now, I know Henry Winkler had starred in, had been a part of the Lords of Flatbush. And
right.
that was kind of the initial Fonzarelli look, right? Is that what helped to get him the role on Happy Days?
No, I don't think that the film wasn't out at that time. So no, he just went in a room and auditioned. He might have showed them pictures from the film or something, but he just went into a room and auditioned. You know, I mean, the Fonzie character was written as over six feet tall and big and kind of a character biker. Henry went in, who's 5'8". He went in there, this thin, genius actor, and convinced them that he was 7 feet tall. It was totally against what was written. And honestly, if it wasn't for Henry, there wouldn't have been Happy Days. If people asked me, gee, were you jealous? I said, are you kidding me? He bought me a house. Are you crazy?
Right. And he yeah. also stood up for the cast, right? At some point, they wanted to change the show to Fonzie's Happy Days and really make it Fonzie-centric, but he was the one that kind of stopped that.
Well, he did. It was two selfless people that made the show work. One, Ron Howard had the authority to stay out in front. And when they decided to put the Fonz more forward in the show, he was the first one to say, absolutely, absolutely, it's going to make the show. And then Fred Silverman wanted to change it to Fonzie's Happy Days. And Henry said, absolutely not. It's a family. It's a cast. It stays Happy Days.
That's pretty impressive, especially when you consider today's culture in Hollywood. It sure seems like the celebrities are much more about themselves and
yeah.
pressing themselves forward than they are worried about the overall. And maybe that's why the show endures so much, is that you had a real family. This wasn't just a bunch of actors who came together on the set. You guys played softball together. You hung out together. There was a real bond and friendship with the entire cast, right?
There was and there is. I mean, we've been friends for over 40 years. It was very important to Gary Marshall that we all played softball, that we were all somewhat athletic. Because one of the first things he did was put together a softball team. And most of us are ex-athletes. And we went all over the world playing exhibition softball games against the Marines, the Army, the Air Force. We played in almost every major stadium in the United States. We did pregame charity games. you know, we play against their football team or we play against their radio stations. But he thought that putting a team together and traveling together would keep a bond that you just don't get on a set. And he was right. I mean, softball became a very big part of our lives. It bonded us as team members. You know, you're always there for your team members. And along with that, he created an atmosphere of education at the Paramount lot. He made sure that we were inspired to learn everything we could about show business and not just act and not just worry about the color of our wallpaper in our dressing rooms. He inspired us to get out of the way of ourselves, educate ourselves, and get the tools it takes for a long-term career. So Gary gave us these very long-term friendships and also the reason we're still in the business today. He gave us the inspiration and the education and opened the doors for us to learn many other areas of the entertainment business. That's why we're directing, we're writing, we're producing, all because Gary insisted that we take the opportunity of Happy Days and expand ourselves.
You know, I had a chance to meet you. I think it was, it's got to be maybe about 8 years now. We were at Dragon Con. I was there doing talks, and you were there with, I believe it was Don Most and Aaron Moran doing an autograph signing.
I think so. It was Don. It was myself. It was Aaron. I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I
remember that. That was about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I had a chance to meet you guys, and that was such a really cool moment, and I've still got the autograph picture from the three of you. It was one of those interesting deals, and as I stood there, as I like to watch how the celebrities interact with the fandom. And it was so neat to watch that, you know, you've got Dragon Con is kind of this sci-fi nerd fest that people, including myself, love to attend. And, you know, they're going to see people from Battlestar Galactica and they're going to see people from, old 70s sci-fi TV shows. And there in the midst of this is this fun, happy little table of Happy Days characters. But what was great to me was I watched the fans light up the way they spoke with the three of you, as opposed to, you know, you go up, you're, oh, hi, Gil Gerard, you know, I love your autograph. They give him an autograph. He's on. And not the putting down Gil at all. He's a wonderful man. But it was a different kind of energy watching people interact. It was like, oh, my God, old friends. Holy cow, how have you guys been? It was just this, it was really kind of a neat little experience to watch them interact with you guys. And you guys were so kind and sweet to the fans, which is also refreshing in today's environment to watch these autograph signings. But you brought up Paramount Studios, too, and I wanted to mention something interesting. We've talked off air about the possibility of haunted theaters, and plus I had been asked, along with a couple of our friends from a California group, to investigate a few of the spots at Paramount Studios. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm in. And the first set they take us on is the Soundstage 19. And they start telling us all of the shows that were filmed there. And the capper was, and this was the home of Happy Days. And the reason they wanted us there was that there's a haunting that's going on. And some of the workers who had been building this set that was in place had been unnerved. Tools would go missing. Voices would be heard. Sometimes they would see what they thought was a little girl running around the set and there was nobody on set. So they were kind of unnerved. So we went in to actually just kind of give it a once over a look, and we caught nothing. But I will tell you, I got one of the happiest, and most intriguing electronic voice phenomena I'd ever heard in my life. I have this radio, the spirit box, they call it, and it's a radio that sweeps through the FM dial or AM dial, and you're pretty well shielded in these deals, so I'm not getting any actual bleed through. All I'm getting is the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch of the radio, and I'm talking to the docent, and the docent has no faith or belief in the haunting at Paramount. He goes, Dave, I've been here forever, and he goes, our security guards will talk to us about ghosts because Paramount is backed up against Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And he would say that there were people seen walking between the buildings and the cemetery that would just be gone. And there were a lot of security guards that didn't like to work that area of the lot. But 19 is all the way over on the other side. And he said, nothing's ever happened here. So, you know, we're talking about the different tools. And he goes, well, what does that one do? And I said, well, supposedly it gives a template of noise for spirits if they want to talk. And he goes, what? And I go, well, let's give it a try. So we turned it on and it's sweeping. And I said, if there's anybody here that would like to communicate, this would be a good time to say hello. And Anson, I got to tell you, at that moment, this radio came alive, and all of a sudden you hear, hello, hi, hola, blah, 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 and like five different versions of hello come out of my radio at the same time, one right after another.
Oh, wow.
And the docent just turns at me and he goes, that's a joke, right? Is somebody broadcasting that to your radio? I said, no, how did I know you were going to tell me to pull my radio out? That's just what happened. And he goes, that's crazy. But you know, he dismissed it till we went around to the other side of the lot where we went on the set of, what the heck is it? Soul Train. That's what it is. I was going to say Solid Gold, but
right.
It was Soul Train.
Right.
And there's the set's all kind of down, but they've got the big gong hanging in the sky from Soul Train. They've got all the stuff around, and he's talking to us about the haunting while the other investigators are off. And Anson, my hand on a Bible, as we're standing there, you hear footsteps across the concrete floor approach the two of us, the docent and myself. And the footsteps walk right up to us and stop. And he just looks at me and he goes, what is that? And I said, I'm not sure. I'm guessing somebody's here with us. And then, like a perfect cue, the gong, which is hanging up nowhere near a person, goes boom. And he just looks at me and he goes, can we get out of here now? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he goes, Dave, I've been working here forever. This has never happened. This is insane. And once we got outside, he said, you know, what's really creepy is this is where Red Fox passed away, this set right in this area. And he said, I've never heard anything here. Other people have, and I've laughed about it. He goes, but that was uncanny. That was unbelievable. So you had this. I mean, was there any talk or legend at that time of the sets on Paramount being haunted?
Well, not so much. I didn't hear anything about sets back then, but everyone did. I'll tell you, what was very strange, Paramount is backed up against that Hollywood Cemetery.
Right.
And I'll tell you, late at night sometimes, especially when we first started the show, it wasn't three camera. It was shot like a movie, and we'd be there for hours to like midnight, 11, you know, I mean, just forever. And when we'd leave, and we were at a different stage, back a little bit, more toward the cemetery, we went out of our way not to cross that line to that side of the lot.
Really?
It was strange. It was like, you just felt, I never saw anything. But it got colder, and you just felt this change of energy. It was just this heavy, heavy feeling. And basically, stay away. You know, or I don't know, but maybe it was me saying stay away. But we kind of laughed. We weren't laughing. We just really stayed away from it because it was a heavy change in energy. Right, the closer you got to that wall, the heavier it got, and you just knew something was going on. You just knew it.
Yeah, that was.
You know, but I didn't want to know. I was a young kid. I didn't want to know too much.
Right. And I had such a great time and such an interesting part of history to get to go on the Paramount sets, to be there and know that this is where Happy Days was filmed. This is where Laverne and Shirley was filmed. This is where I Love Lucy or the Lucy Show was filmed. There were all of these sets around there, and it was just fascinating. We're talking with Anson Williams from Happy Days, talking about some of the paranormal aspects. You know, we had a chance to talk to Henry Winkler on our show, I think about 4 years ago when he was coming through promoting. And he obviously has some kind of fascination with the paranormal. He's produced quite a few paranormal shows and programming. And let's face it, Anson, Fonzie is definitely something to do with the paranormal. Anybody can hit a jukebox and turn it on, can defeat the devil or an alien from another planet with the power of a thumb. He's obviously got some kind of paranormal, supernatural abilities involved. That's weird. Did Gary Marshall ever explain why he pitted Fonzie against the devil and an alien from another planet? Was he interested in that supernatural aspect as well?
We never talked about supernatural gear. I think for him, it was just fun. It's like, who can we pair with? Well, you know, well, the devil's pretty big. If he beats the devil, that'll get rating. <You know? laughs> And it's so funny, going back to the alien, Mork and Mindy.
Right.
I don't know if people know that story or Mork. First, when you do a sitcom like this, on the first day for the new episode, you sit down. First, you read the following week's script, so they can take it and rewrite it. And then you read the current draft you'll be shooting that week. Well, we sat down and we read Mork for Mork, which is the following week. It was the worst script in the history of Happy Days. It was unreadable. It was so bad. It was horrid.
Wait a minute, Anson.
And,
you're talking about a show who has coined the phrase jumping the shark as one of the worst episodes. You're saying Mork was the worst episode originally?
Jump the Shark was Gone with the Wind. Henry, who's the most, you know, fair-minded, you know, selfless guy, slammed the script on the table saying, "We can't shoot this." What happened was Gary and his son Scotty went to see Star Wars, and Scotty was 10, and he asked his dad to make a Martian Happy Days. So Gary he came up with this concept, and the worst writer on the staff wrote it. So he says, don't worry, we'll fix it. So that we shoot this episode of that week. Next week, there's Mork. We're going to be shooting it that week. It's just as bad. By the way, they hire an actor for Mork. Monday you read, Tuesday rehearse, Wednesday rehearse. You're pretty much done with rehearsal Wednesday night. Thursday, you do camera blocking, where there's no writers. It's just the mechanics of getting the shots for the show. You do a run-through of that. And then Friday, we come in early for some minor notes, and then you shoot a run-through in front of an audience, and you shoot the show that night. So basically, at the end of Wednesday, you're done with rehearsing. It's pretty much locked. Well, Wednesday night, the guest actor quits, who's playing Mork. It wasn't his fault, but he did look like an idiot.
Okay.
He quits. Gary Marshall comes, and we're sitting there. Oh, we're going to have to cancel the episode. Gary Marshall comes down to the stage and says, "Does anybody know a funny Martian?" And Al Molinaro raises his hand and said, "Well, there's this young guy named Robin Williams in my Harvard Limbeck improv class." And Ronnie Howland, who's Gary's sister and the casting director, said, "Oh, yeah, he's funny. He was in the new Laugh-In, those six episodes." Gary said, "I never saw it." Well, the next morning, I come in for camera blocking, and I don't come in right at the – I come in a little later because my scenes were a couple of – weren't at the top of the, that they were – that they were blocking for. So I get in there, and there's every writer on staff is on set, which is very weird for a camera blocking day. And you could feel this energy, and Jerry Paris, our director, runs over to me as I come in, saying, he's a genius. I walk over, and there is Robin Williams reinventing and ad-libbing the entire show. And the writers are there furiously writing down his lines. And in front of my eyes, I watch them invent Nanu Nanu sitting on his head, everything spontaneously. That was Thursday. By Friday night, it was one of the best episodes in the history of Happy Days. And the rest is history. I mean, he became a phenomenon. I mean, we knew it. I mean, it took weeks for the world to know about it. But the night we shot it with those 300 people on their feet screaming for 10 minutes, we knew he was a phenomenon. And honestly, Robin was from another planet. What a genius. And what a kind, shy man off camera. But what a genius. And you felt the light, okay? I mean, you could just see this burning light around this guy, just touched by the hand of our creator. I've never seen anything like it. But that's the story of Mork and Mindy. It went from an unsuitable script to one of the best shows in its history and Robin Williams' career.
This is pretty amazing as well. Happy Days. Now, folks, think about this. The 70s, Happy Days comes on in 1974. You get to follow the Cunningham family through the 50s with their friends and all of the great cast members. But it becomes such a pop phenomena that they actually start spinning off series, which, of course, led to Laverne and Shirley in 1976. We just talked about Mork and Mindy, which came out in 1978. Yep. You had Joni Loves Chachi, which launched in 1982. And then two little-known spinoffs, Blansky's Beauties, which came out in 77 for a season, and Out of the Blue, which was about Random, the angel that appeared in the episode with of Happy Days as well. Then, of course, you had the spinoffs with the Fonz and the Happy Days Gang cartoon. You had Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley Fonz, our cartoon series that came out. That's amazing to have that kind of longevity and that kind of power that any kind of creation from Happy Days would get its own spinoff.
Yeah, well, Donnie and I did a funny pilot. It was called Potsy and Ralph. It was the one spinoff that didn't sell.
Oh, no kidding!
In fact, it was an episode of Happy Days, and people might remember it. It's the one where we're rooming together,
right?
And we do it, and we tape the middle of the room.
Oh, right.
So basically, I can't use the kitchen, but he can't use the bathroom.
Yeah.
It was a great episode. For some reason, it just didn't sell. But we were going to be the new Odd Couple, and it would have been fun. But yeah, that one didn't go. Darn it!
Is that what they refer to as backdoor pilots? They're episodes within an episode, so it's kind of, we're giving mm-hmm. you a taste for how this goes, and then it launches from there?
Yeah, it's a cheap way to do a pilot.
Well, that's true, right. Yeah, you can hide it and make it part of canon. I want to talk, we've been dabbling a little bit into both the reality of Happy Days and some of the cool paranormal aspects of the Paramount lot, but I want to introduce to our audience as well, this is pretty fascinating, and don't worry, folks, we're going to get to the life-saving stuff in a little bit here. I want to mention, though, you've got a pretty fascinating story in your own family dealing with the paranormal, and this has to do with your mom?
Growing up, I was just a number in the world, just I could have been from Oklahoma, wherever. I did, not a Hollywood kid. I mean, basically, we bought a house with a GI Bill for $15,000, one bathroom, never more than $100 in the bank. Anything extra I wanted in my life, I had to go get jobs and earn it. But, so nothing remarkable about the family, but my mother was beyond psychic. Not scary psychic, just like it's how the heck psychic. She never did it for money. She never promoted herself. She would just get feelings, read people's hands, feel people's jewelry. I mean,
psychometry.
So people, if that's what it's called, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Also automatic writing. She would sit there, go in a trance, and she'd write in Russian. She'd write in German. She didn't know any languages, and my dad would take the writing and get it translated. So, I mean, it was quite something. The word got out. There'd be knocks on the door, people asking for reading. I mean, she never charged. They just heard about her. So all my life, I grew up with this, psychic mom. And one amazing story, my dad was a tech illustrator at the time. So he's in a room full of other tech illustrators, and the guy next to him, my dad was bragging about mom and what she could do, and the guy next to him was a skeptic, and he took out this very old little pocket knife, and he said, "Do not lose this. It's an heirloom for my family. Do not lose this. But you take this to your wife, have her hold it, and you tell me what she feels. You tell me what she thinks." He goes, "Fine." Takes the little knife, gets home, gives it to my mom. She takes it and in her hand, and she feels it, and she just almost starts tearing. She goes, "Oh my God, such a powerful man, powerful, kind man, powerful." It's so sad, so sad, so depressed. So, and that's basically what you got: a very powerful man, a very kind man, but a very sad man. So, my dad related those words to when the next day he brought back the little pocket knife. And the guy, his mouth drops. He's stunned. And he tells my dad the story that during the Civil War, I think it was his great-grandmother, a boy, was going to be hung for treason or something like that because he did something innocently, fell asleep on guard duty and something happened. I don't know. But he was pretty innocent, but he was going to be hung. And during those times, the average citizen could actually get an appointment with the President of the United States, or there were days where he could just walk in and he was there for the people. And she went to the President of the United States and got a meeting and begged for her son's life. And this man saved her son's life, but she was so upset, he reached in his pocket and he took out this little pocket knife and gave it to her to calm her down. The man's name was President Abraham Lincoln, a powerful, kind, very sad man. True story.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, when your dad would take these,
true story.
When your dad would take these writings, these automatic writings, and get them translated, would you ever find out what they were about? Why were these voices coming through your mom in the hand of automatic writing? What was the connection?
She would just go. She would go in a trance. She would literally like meditate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I never did find out. I don't know. But all of a sudden, put a paper and a pencil, pen, and she would just her hand would go. There was another time, the police actually interviewed her years and years ago. There was a bus. I think I got this story right. There was a bus of school children that vanished, just vanished. And they couldn't find it. And my mom was sitting there, all of a sudden, this image flashed on her. And she told my dad, now it's either one or the other, I don't remember. She told my dad, either it was in a dark cave or it was buried underground in the basic area. My dad was so convinced that she had something, she went to the police, and the police interviewed her. Now, when they found the bus, I don't remember if they found it in a dark cave or if it was buried, but basically it was the opposite of what my mom said. But she was close enough to know that this bus was in a very dark place, hidden from the world. They found it too, by the way.
Wow.
And the kids are okay. I don't know if they buried it and they had air or if it was in a cave. I don't know. You probably could look it up. I mean, it was 60 years ago, or whatever. But anyway,
she set them off in the right. Yeah, she set them off in the right direction. Yeah, then.
But she was right. I mean, I don't know if it helped find it or not, but she was right. She was right that you won't find it. Either she said in a cave or buried, but it's hidden, totally hidden. You won't find it. It was a different place to look.
Have you personally had any of that gift transferred to you? Or do you ever find yourself feeling very psychic or connected to things?
Yeah, not like her though. Maybe because I haven't perfected it, and I think a lot of people. I'm sure you have it too. Anyone that's like, I don't, kind of outside the box, and where you're always, you're not stuck in a one note situation. You're like, we're very fluid people. You might be more open to, you know, receiving. One time, very strongly, it was in the 70s, I was doing a cerebral palsy benefit in Kearney, Nebraska. And and it was like quite a few stops to get to Kearney. Anyway, we're doing the event, and the next morning I had a flight out to Lincoln, and then from Lincoln you get a flight home to L.A. Well, this wonderful man was kind of my sponsor for the day, took me around, and he said that his friend, a doctor, had a plane, and he'd be glad, whoever wanted to, he'd be glad to fly them to Lincoln that night after the show. Well, I had this, like, overwhelming, but no, just don't do it. So I said, no, thanks, but no, you know, I'll wait. Well, Gloria DeHaven was there. Someone was there. Anyway, her band leader went, and a couple of musicians went, and they flew out after the show. And a little while, I get a knock on my hotel room door, and it's the producer of the show. He opened the door, and I just blurted out, where did it explode? He said, how did you know? I said, I don't. What? He said, it blew up over Omaha.
Holy cow.
Or Omaha, or wherever it was. Whatever. So anyway, in a fireball. Everyone, you know, the man that took me around was on that plane. And he had a six-month-old kid. I mean, anyway, it was tragic. But it was, I mean, I never felt anything so strong to not do something. And then I knew. When that knock on the door, I knew it. I just knew it. I knew it. And I don't know how I knew it. I wasn't thinking about it. I just blurted it out.
But it was right
there. The one thing with my mom, she really, really didn't want to read anymore. Really, really wanted to shut herself off because she would feel tragedy too. She didn't want to know. You know, she didn't want to know. You know, and at times there were just things so strong that she knew it. She just didn't want to know. She didn't want to have that feeling. She didn't want to have that knowledge. She didn't want to have to look at that person and know that there was something wrong, you know?
Right. Well, there's that survivor guilt and remorse, and especially if you're given these visions, but there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do to stop one of these. That has to be a horrible aspect of the gift.
I guess, and she didn't. I think it kind of might have shortened her life a little bit, too. Because she passed away at 65. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. But it there was a lot there that was, it was overwhelming. I mean, she was just, it was just overwhelming, her gifts. And I could go on and on, but yeah. So, definitely. I know there's stuff. But to me, I'm like you, though. I don't believe in, like, you know, weird spirits and all these kind of media-created whatever. I believe in science. I really do think there's science behind all of this.
I agree with you. And we've got, talking about science, we've got something that's going to save lives today. This is a big part of why I reached out to have Anson on our show, especially for our audience base. We're going to do that when we return. But first, for our Theater of the Mind today, I have a very personal story from my own recollections. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's Theater of the Mind.
From the personal files of Darkness Radio's Dave Schrader, this is Theater of the Mind. It was roughly the spring of 1990. I know this because it was such a marked spot in my life. I had just lost one of the most important people in my life. My grandfather had passed away just 2 months before. It was devastating. I had only suffered a few minor losses throughout my life, but my grandfather was my hero. He was like a second father to me, and when his death came, it was fast and unexpected. Although, in true hero form, he had been dwindling away slowly from cancer that was eating him alive from inside, but never told any of us. We had had a chance to go visit my grandfather just weeks before his passing, and he never let on the kind of pain that he was in. It wasn't until after he passed that the doctors told us just how bad it had been. The cancer had spread throughout his entire body, and most of his movements were probably extremely painful. But he, like always, kept a stiff upper lip and a smile on his face, a story to tell, and cheer in his heart. To say I wasn't handling his death well would be, well, a bit of an understatement. I had gone into one of the darkest times in my life. It left me completely devastated and hollow feeling. I loved my grandfather like no other. It was a punch that our entire family took, and it was hard to stand back up from. After about 2 months of constant mourning and crippling pain from his loss, I had an amazing experience. One night I'd been sleeping. I can't tell you what the dream was, but all I can tell you was I was walking in a field of tall grass. Well, actually, running through the field of tall grass. I could feel the breeze against my face, the sound of the wind through the tall fields, and then I heard it. My grandfather's voice. "Hey, kid." I turned around, and I was no longer in this field of overgrown grass. I was standing inside of my grandfather's living room in Faraday, Louisiana. I stood there, somewhat confounded. I turned around quickly, and the field was gone. I was completely inside his house. This dream was so real. Every aspect, every nuance of the dream. You could smell things. You could hear things. I could feel things in this house. And I remember looking, and where I was standing faced the outside. I could see down the hall, out the window, into what used to be the servants' quarters. My grandfather came strolling out of the old servants' quarters, looking much younger than I remembered him, and he made his way across the yard towards the door. And I remember consciously having the thought, "Oh my God, I'm about to talk to a dead man." I think he took this path so that it would have time to really click with me. I was fully aware at that moment as well that I was within a dream, but it was unlike any dream I had ever experienced before. He approached the side of the house and opened up the door to the breezeway. The creaking of the screen door, his gentle footsteps walking through the house in his cowboy boots. And there he stood right in front of me, bigger and better than ever. "Hey, kid, I think we need to talk." I just slowly nodded. He walked towards me, and together we entered his living room. "You're not handling this real good, kid. I've been sent here to talk to you." I just miss you so much. I wasn't ready to let go. I never got to say the things I wanted to say. My grandfather just met me with a kind smile, and he said, "Why are you so afraid? What's really bothering you?" And I told him, "It's been my overwhelming fear of death since I was a very young child." He slowly nodded and listened to me as I regaled him with my tales of nightmares and long nights afraid to fall asleep for the fear that I may not wake up in the morning. And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, kid, I'm here now. What questions do you have for me? Well, here I was, given the golden keys to knowledge. My grandfather, back alive, much younger, much healthier, standing before me, offering to answer any questions I had. So I looked him in his eyes and I said, "Did it hurt? Did death hurt?" "No, living hurt. I felt much better once I let go." Cancer had eaten my grandfather's body rapidly, so the release for him was definitely a much better thing. "Well, when you died, when you went to heaven, did you see the light? Did you see your friends and relatives? Were they there to meet you and greet you?" "Yep, every one of them. All my brothers and sisters that preceded me in death, and your grandmother, and my parents, and my friends, they were all here." And then I tilted my head, much like a confused puppy, and I could sense that he knew that I was very confused by one of the statements he made. "Well, go ahead, ask. What do you want to know?" "Grandma was there?" "Well, of course your grandmother was here." "Well, what's going to happen when Noelle, your second wife, dies?" And my grandfather took a long pause and stared at me, and his head began to tip a little as well. His eyebrow arched. "What do you mean?" "Well, they were all there to greet you when you passed away and came to heaven. What's going to happen with Noelle? Who are you going to be with? Are you going to be with Grandma? Or are you going to be with Noelle?" My grandfather had a fantastic laugh. It reminded me of Muttley from the old cartoons, and he let out with a side splitter. And I said, "What? What's so funny?" And he said, "That's a good question, kid." He said, "Here's what you'll find. When she passes, we'll all be here to meet her, including your grandmother." So I stopped. I pulled back my head and looked at my grandfather, and I said, "What kind of weird hippie commune do you live in up there?" And again, he met me with a smile. "It's different here, Dave. On Earth, there's a sense of ownership, of title. I love you, you love me, I'm your boyfriend, you're my girlfriend, I'm your grandpa, you're my grandson. Everybody has a title. But when you come here, love is just love. It's all around us. You're just part of it." "Okay. So you're not really together with Grandma. You're just there and part of this realm." "Exactly." That brought a bit of comfort to me. And knowing that they would all be there to greet me, that brought a lot of comfort to me. We chatted a bit more about silly little things, things that I just wanted to know and were important and personal to me. And then I said, "I'm so afraid of death. I'm so afraid of leaving here." My grandfather lowered his brow. He looked me in the eyes and he said, "Well, stop worrying about it, kid. First of all, there's nothing you can do about it. Second of all, you got a long, long time before you need to worry about anything like that." "All right, if you say so." "Listen, kid, I can't do this again. This was a one-off, but I wanted you to know that I love you, and I'm here for you, and I'll always be around, even though we'll never have another conversation like this again." I shook my head in understanding. We're a very huggy, lovey, touchy-feeling family, so I opened my arms to give my grandfather one last goodbye hug. He opened his arms and graciously accepted me in, and I pulled back. I recoiled. The feeling was unlike anything I'd ever encountered before. It felt as though I had grabbed a large, vibrating shaft of hot electric air. My grandfather just looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're not used to that. Okay, now give me a hug." And I went and I returned the hug again, only this time it was the tactile feeling I was used to. His shirt, his arms. As a matter of fact, I remember touching his elbow because my grandfather had the boniest elbows on planet Earth, and it was all the way I remembered it. "All right, kid, I gotta go now. Let everybody know I love him." And with that, he slowly started to fade into darkness. My eyes began to flutter, and I could see him in the room in front of me, slowly fading away into the black. At that moment, I was trying to convince myself it had been nothing more than a dream, just my mind's way of working through the grief. But that's when my girlfriend rolled over next to me and said, "Go shut the closet door. I can smell your grandfather's cologne." I turned my head slowly towards the closet door, and it was shut. Now, the reason she had brought that up was that after my grandfather's passing, I had selected a few of his favorite items, his smoking jacket, his Budweiser button-up shirt, and a few other keepsakes. And they still smelled like my grandfather's cologne. They still smelled like my grandfather was alive and there. And it made me comfortable. I could go into that closet, and I could smell or feel the presence of my grandfather. But here I had just had a very profound experience that I could only chalk up to being a very vivid dream. But my girlfriend could smell my grandfather's cologne. As a matter of fact, I could smell my grandfather's cologne. I couldn't wrap my head around it, but I felt better. I felt more comforted, and I rolled over and went to sleep. Within a few days, life was getting back to normal, and I wasn't mourning as deeply and as passionately as I had. Somehow I felt that in that moment, in that dream visitation, long before I knew what a dream visitation was, that I had had some of my closure. Well, again, being a lifelong person fearful of death, it didn't take long for that nagging fear to start itching at the back of my skull. I was so preoccupied with death that I was forgetting to learn how to live. Driving home one day with my girlfriend, about a week after this incident, we were driving down the road in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Cruising down the road on our way home, it was a light rain that day. I had a small Geo Metro, and I slammed on the brakes as I saw that two trucks had stopped short up at the light. My car began to hydroplane. All I could see was the back of that truck, and I knew we were going to slide under it and most likely be killed. With that, I raised my hands up and placed them on top of my head, and I just said aloud, "I am so sorry. I am so, so sorry." My girlfriend turned to look at me, and like a miracle, the wheel of my car began to turn. My car fit exactly between the two stopped trucks in front of me. We slid in between the two trucks. I mean, so close that you could roll down her window or my window and barely put your finger out, and you would be touching the side of the trucks. And then my engine stopped from a full roar to nothing and powered off. I took a deep breath. I looked at her. She looked at me. The two truck drivers looked down in pure amazement and astonishment, and my car started up again. We drove off safely home. And in that moment, I felt this was the message. Stop worrying about death so much. All I could hear was my grandfather's voice resounding in my head. You don't have to worry. It's a long way off. Well, that was a hell of a lesson to learn, and it was a terrifying moment, but again, I felt comforted. I think my grandfather was there to take that wheel to show me, just once and for all the worry in the world won't do you any good. Just let go and trust and live your life. So I have. And although that fear continues to confound me and does rear its ugly head from time to time, I feel that I had one of the best gifts ever given to me. A visitation for my grandfather, and a quick reminder to stop focusing on death and start to live the life I'm meant to lead.
Beyond the darkness.
Hello, welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Now, I just had a chance to share with you one of my own stories involving the spirit world, the paranormal, and driving. And I wanted to reach out to Anson originally to be on the show because doing the shows that we do and the late night schedules, I've tried everything. Everything I can to keep awake, whether it's overdosing on coffee or monster energy drinks or 5-hour energy shots. And none of them really work effectively for me. The 5-hour energy drinks, although will pick me up, they make me feel flush, warm, sick to my stomach. It just doesn't have that impact. And I was driving home from Coast to Coast AM, where we recorded it in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I was driving home after a show at 4:00 in the morning and had rolled down my windows, was blaring some rock music, just trying to keep myself awake for the almost 90-minute ride home. And I had the weirdest experience I've ever had while driving. I would be driving eyes wide open, and all of a sudden I jerked the wheel as though I had fallen asleep for a few seconds or had closed my eyes. And we've all had that moment while you're driving and you're thinking, okay, I'm just going to close them for a second, just to rest them for a second. And you close your eyes and you kind of pop back into reality. Only my eyes weren't closing. And I was perplexed by this. I got home the next day, talked to Tim, and I was telling him what happened. And I was surprised to find out Tim was very well-versed on this. He knew about this. It's called micro-naps. When you get to the point you are so exhausted, your brain takes over, and it wants to help you. Cold air blowing in my window through Minnesota air, rock and roll radio blaring in my car, trying to sing along, trying to keep myself awake. But my brain knew it was time for night-night, and it was trying to shut me down. And it would put me into these micro naps. So even though my eyes were open, basically I was falling asleep wide open. And that scared the hell out of me, especially because, hey, I've got a family I've got to take care of. I've got people that rely on me. And more importantly, there's other cars on the road, and they have families, and they have people that rely on them. And this, to me, felt almost criminal, as though I'm putting lives on the road. I've now begun staying in hotels up in St. Cloud when I have a long night so that I don't put myself or anyone else in this kind of danger. But I needed something else, because there are late nights. As you know, we do these live events all over the United States and around the world, and we do a lot of late night paranormal investigating. And I couldn't find anything that worked. So as I'm doing my research, I come upon these alert drops. And I start reading about it, and I'm like, what the heck? Potsy Weber is selling alert drops? What is this? And I start reading it. But what blew me away, folks, is this isn't just one of our favorite TV icons hawking a product because that's where he's at in his career and needs to make this. It blew me away how he's trying to save lives. And his partner on this venture, the guy that helped inspire him, is his own uncle, Dr. Henry Heimlich. Yeah, that Heimlich, that Dr. Heimlich. And now, Anson, let's talk a little bit about this, because I have a lot of our listeners that are over-the-road truckers, that are late-night drivers, that are paranormal investigators, and they're doing everything they can to try to stay awake so that they can have these experiences or not kill themselves while they're just doing their job. And the rest of these things aren't working. Man, I was shocked. Cold air and rock and roll music wasn't enough to keep me awake. What happened to you that inspired you to look into doing this and releasing alert drops?
Well, I went through the same thing as you. I was directing years and years ago. I think 1988, maybe. It could be that far back. I was directing a show called Slap Maxwell, starring Dabney Coleman.
Right.
And we were filming in the local desert outside of Los Angeles. It was a very hot day, and I was exhausted, but I didn't realize how exhausted, and I'm driving home, and just like my eyes are open, and all of a sudden, I'm asleep. And seconds later, I wake up bouncing around in the desert. I almost killed myself. So lucky I didn't, slam into these huge cactuses. Really scared me. And, Dr. Heimlich and I, who's actually my second cousin, but I've called him uncle since I was born, he was a big influence in my life. He passed away last December 17th. But we were very close. In fact, together we got the Heimlich maneuver on national television for the first time in the early 70s.
Tell us that story too, and then we'll go back into this, because I want to relate something to you about that that totally flashed in my mind since our last conversation. But go ahead and explain how Happy Days actually helped launch the Heimlich maneuver.
It did. It's kind of strange, right? Circumstance or not, I wonder. I had done the Merv Griffin show a few times. And Dr. Heimlich came out to visit on the Happy Day set, and he was promoting, getting the word out on the Heimlich maneuver, but he wasn't getting a lot of national attention. He was getting regional attention. And he was getting a lot of problems with the Red Cross and all this. And so we're on the set, and while we're talking, the set phone rings. And it was for me, and it was a producer from the Merv Griffin show. I guess someone had dropped out. And they were wondering if I was available to take their place that night. I would sing a song, and then I'd sit with Merv and get interviewed. So I said, yes. And I ran over to Henry, Hank. I said, Hank, maybe we can convince Merv to put the Heimlich maneuver on. I'm going to be there. Maybe there's a way to get this on national television. So he came with me that night, got him a seat in the audience, and I'm looking for Merv. I can't find him. I rehearsed the song. I still can't find him. So basically, I thought, well, we won't get the opportunity. Whatever. Oh, well. So the show starts, and I do my song. And then there's a commercial break while I walk over to the area where I'm interviewed by Merv. Well, I'm sitting there, and there's Merv, and I have a couple of minutes to do an elevator pitch. So I told him about Dr. Heimlich and the audience, the Heimlich maneuver. And for some reason, he had read something about it somewhere. And he went, yes, I heard of that. Oh, yeah, very interesting. That's all he said. Lights come up. I think I'm going to get interviewed. But he brings up the Heimlich maneuver, introduces Dr. Heimlich out of the audience, brings him on stage, and he does the maneuver on Merv. A few days later, it aired on national television. It started exploding across the country. Three weeks later, he's on the Carson show, and it became a part of our culture, saving lives. Again, if I wasn't on the set of Happy Days that day, who knows? who knows what would have happened.
So 1988, Anson, I'm at a movie theater with a bunch of my buddies. And we're all hanging out waiting for our movie to let out and for us to get into the theater. And they've got one of those little candy machines there, you know, the crank kind. You put a quarter in, you turn it, you get a handful of stuff. So I put in my quarter, I get a handful of peanuts. And we're sitting there talking, and I'm popping peanuts in. And all of a sudden, I throw one down just as my buddy does something to make me laugh, and I inhale it, and it goes into my air pipe. And I drop the peanuts that are left in my hand, and I start putting my hands to my throat that I'm choking. My buddies all think I'm joking around. Nobody's coming to help. And I swear to God, I flash back to the Heimlich maneuver and how to do it to yourself. I burst into the back of this movie theater. Everybody stops and looks at me. I run behind one of the seats, position myself, and drop. And boom, out comes that peanut. And, of course, a very loud, very loud belch noise that came with it. But I saved my life because of the Heimlich maneuver and having seen it performed and doing that. So that was, again, that just struck me the other day. I've been a very lucky man. Many times in my life I should have been removed from this planet. But something keeps turning those gears. So, folks, had Patsy Weber not been on TV, he might not have ever brought his uncle to the Merv Griffin Show to put out the Heimlich maneuver, that something that would eventually end up saving my life and millions around the world. So that's pretty powerful in itself. So again, I wanted to play up the fact this is really amazing, guys. This is Dr. Henry Heimlich, one of the most renowned doctors and somebody that is known for life-saving techniques. And just as an aside, he gives his nephew, his second cousin, a bit of advice on staying awake. So you have this accident. You go to Henry, what do you do?
I told him about it, and Dr. Heimlich was an expert on how the body helps the body. He really, as much as he was a medical doctor, he also was in alternative medicine too. He liked to help people solve problems as naturally as possible. And as far as this, he really understood the body and the sensory connection of tongue and brain. So he told me to cut up lemons, keep them in the car. If I ever felt the least bit tired, bite into it. And he explained how the citric acid with the sour lemon envelops the lingual nerve on top of the tongue. And the automatic bodily reflex reaction is adrenaline. So when the citric acid and lemon hits that lingual nerve, whoop, you're up, you're alert, nothing in your system, your own body waking the body. And sure enough, I started doing that and never had the problem again. Works. It's a reflex reaction of adrenaline. Works every time. And doesn't take 20 minutes, doesn't go in your system, doesn't make you crazy. It's your own body connecting and waking the body. Old, very old science that he knew. So through the years, I went into the product business along with the entertainment business. And we invented, many, many different products that were problem solvers. Well, a few years ago, we're researching drowsy driving. And as you know, drowsy driving is up there with guns, drunk driving, medicated driving. It's one of the most catastrophic problems in the United States today. Not only the United States, the world. In 2012, the National Sleep Foundation did a detailed study, research study, and they found at least there were 168 million drowsy drivers a year. I'll say it again, 168 million drowsy drivers. One out of five admitted to falling asleep, so you know it's more. At least one out of five accidents. More deaths than drunk driving and medicated driving combined. Average age of fatalities, 19 to 25. And kids, college kids are coming home, husbands are coming home, mothers are coming home, innocent kids are killed. Ridiculous, catastrophic situation. And I thought, we can cure this. With the craziness in this world, we can cure this. We can stop this. So I called up Hank, and you talk about psychic, you just have that gut instinct.
Right.
It's almost like something from beyond driving me and pushing me for this. It wasn't me. Something's pushing me for this. I called Dr. Heimlich. I said, I have this idea, but you got to help me. He goes, what do you need? I said, you got to tell me. If I got the right amount of citric acid and the right amount of sour lemon and water, and I put it into a spray jar, and we just sprayed the middle of the top of the tongue, wouldn't that hit the lingual nerve, and wouldn't that do what biting into a lemon does? He goes, oh, my God. He says, not only it'll work better, it'll be a direct hit. Absolutely do it. And he told me, you will save more lives than the Heimlich maneuver. So we did. We spent 2 years, we brought in substitutes, and by the way, it's all natural. It's a strong hit of citric acid, formulated natural sour lemon, water, and a little bit of preservative. That's it. That's the entire combination and chemistry of this product. This little spray hits the lingual nerve, and boom, you're up, you're awake, you're alert instantly. Only thing in the world that will work other than hot peppers. If you put hot peppers on your tongue, it'll do the same thing. I'd rather have alert drops.
Right.
It's a lot more civilized.
And that's where I come in with this, too. I wanted to try something that as I said, I've tried the Monster Energy drinks. They give me the jitters. And when I crash hard. It's almost like equating it to what I now know about diabetes because of my daughter's diagnosis in the summer is right. I would be fine for a short time and then crash incredibly hard. And that was just as dangerous.
Yep. It screws up your sleep pattern. It's a merry-go-round for exhaustion. Also, I'm not saying good or bad, but there's just been too much evidence with those drinks of the heart problems and brain hemorrhaging and if you take too much of that stuff. And there's no need to. It doesn't solve the problem because every year it's drowsy driving deaths, fatalities, tragedies are going up and up and up and up. This is Dr. Heimlich's brilliance. He knows how the body helps the body. This is science. This is old science to naturally, instantly become alert and save a life. You know, kids, I mean, not only that, we're finding that late night workers are having positive effects, heavy construction workers, nurses, doctors, anyone that needs to be alert for their jobs, for their professions, kids in school, when they're falling asleep in class, they're alert. They're not taking this no-dose and all this other stuff that's like, you know, overwhelming amounts of caffeine that just totally screws your sleep pattern. You don't need it. You just need old science. You need the lingual nerve to wake up the body. That's all you need. And if people go to alertdrops.com, they'll learn all about it. Not only about the product, but the history of drowsy driving, Dr. Heimlich. We've been honored by the United States Congress already, by the California State Senate, by the City of Los Angeles. But that's all meaningless. It's a product that's going to save lives. And also,
Anson. I want people to realize, don't discount that. Anson Williams has been acknowledged as an expert on the subject of drowsy driving by the LAPD, the California Senate, and Congress. And that is important because, again, then this isn't somebody just trying to hawk a product. This is somebody that's made something that is out to save lives and that he's been recognized by these groups tells you that this is an important change. And so many of you out there, I love our listeners, Anson. I love working with them at Paranormal events. I love hearing their stories. And this to me struck a chord because I used the alert drops on the last time that I had to do Coast and it worked exactly as you said, but it didn't give me and I think when people think, oh, you're affecting the adrenal gland and you're kicking it in, it's not like a rush and all of a sudden you're Superman. It's just a nice alert and it brings you back to the moment and you're good to go. And the nice thing is when I'm driving down the road, and I start to feel a little fatigued again, it's another quick little shot, and there's no drugs, there's no side effects, there's nothing that's going to hurt me in this deal. And that's what was really important to me as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, even people tell me, oh, I drink coffee. Well, that's great. I mean, I'll drink a cup of coffee too, but it's not going to save your life. First, it takes 20 minutes to take effect, so it could be too late. And two, you need too much of it. It's gonna totally screw up your sleep pattern. It's not an effective way of stopping the problem, you know.
Let me cover some of the stats again because this was really quite an expose for me to find this information out. 30% of people report dozing off behind the wheel. Think about that, folks. Mm-hmm. At any given time, 30% of people admit that they're dozing off at the wheel. 6,400 people die every year as a result of driving drowsy. That means in the last 10 years, 60,000 people have passed away, almost 70,000 people have passed away as a result of driving drowsy. And there's probably many more that we just don't know about that are drowsy drivers that had that happen.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You can't, you know, there's a lot more because the people are courageous that tell that admit it. Most don't admit it. So you can imagine how much more tragic situations there are.
And then we've got false information like the loud music and rolling down your windows. That's not a way to protect yourself from drowsy driving. And you may think it works, but it's worked for me in the past or so I've thought. But what it really was my brain was okay with me doing what I was doing and it kept me alert. But there are those days when your brain is just going to start to shut off. And if you feel that overwhelming tired, you're starting to get that white line fever and drowsy, this is an easy way to fix that. And this was one of the most telling examples because, Anson, I mentioned when I had my moment with that micro naps, I realized I felt this overwhelming guilt. I felt like what it must be like to be a drunk driver and realize, oh, my God, I could have killed somebody today. Losing 2 hours of sleep. I want you guys to listen to this now. This is scientifically proven fact that losing 2 hours of sleep is equal to having 3 beers. So if you're a lightweight, if you're a lightweight and you're tired anyway, and then drinking on top of it, imagine how much more dangerous you are. That's crazy. But for people that are driving drowsy, and many of us are, whether it's our early morning commute to work or our late night commute home from work, you need to have something that's going to save your life. And I also like this answer because I got to tell you, a lot of the field that I work in with the paranormal, people love to investigate late night. And they will dose up on these heavy caffeinated drinks. And then they're having all kinds of paranormal experiences, Anson. Hard to believe, but this is waking me up to it. Well, it's also been proven that levels of caffeine, even in one cup of coffee, can cause minor hallucinations. So when you're dosing yourself with monster energy drinks, 5-hour energy drinks, any of this stuff, or massive amounts of coffee, you're opening yourself up to hallucinations. So the experiences you think you're having may not even be legitimate experiences. So this is something that should be used in every investigator's kit for you and your team. You can get this. And I'll tell you what we do have. If you go to darknessradio.com, and you click on the killer deals link that we have there, it'll open up our Amazon page. You can find the alert drops there. So it's really easy. You already know our website, or you can go right to alertdrops.com and order these. And they sell them in single packs, double and triple packs. So you can get multiples, and there's great little discounts as you buy more for this. So you and your team, whether you're Bigfoot investigating, ghost hunting, or UFO watching, this is a great safe alternative. And that's why I wanted to mention this, because it is so important to me that, boy, if we can save some lives together, Anson, and make this known and share this episode, share even just this part of the episode with friends of yours that you might know that need this information, because you may be saving a life as well.
Well, that's true. This is collaboration. And I want to thank you so much for spreading the word. You know, no one can do it by themselves. This is a team effort. And everyone listening out there, spread the word. We all can do something very positive right now. We all could be saving lives, stopping unnecessary tragedies. You know, we haven't even talked about the thousands of people who didn't die, but they have problems for life. I mean, you know, we can stop all of these. If we all just take a little responsibility, and it's so nice in this crazy world we're in now, where so many people feel we're out of control, we don't have control. We do have control of this. We do. We can actually do something positive right now, right today, and keep families together, stop them from being torn apart, make sure kids come home. We can do this, but I can't do it myself. I'm spreading the word, but it's up to all of us. It's all of us need to take the responsibility and save our friends' lives, save our family lives. It's so simple. And again, it's all because of Dr. Heimlich. He passed away last December, I believe 17th, I talked to him a few weeks before. He was 96 years old. One of the last parts of our conversation was promising him that this will get out to everyone. And he reiterated it will save more lives than the Heimlich maneuver. He cares a lot. His legacy is saving lives because he was alive. And now he's saving lives not only with the maneuver, but with alert drops. And, let's together, join hands and save lives.
I agree. And you mentioned some of the other stats. In the United States, 250,000 drivers fall asleep at the wheel every day. And according to the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School, and in a national poll by the National Sleep Foundation, 54% of adult drivers, think about that, over half of adult drivers said that they had driven while drowsy during the past year, with 28% saying that they'd actually fallen asleep while driving. And according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, drowsy driving is a factor in more than 100,000 crashes, resulting in 6,550 deaths. And as Anson said, we're not even talking about the people that have survived but have been left with long-standing after effects. Out of the 100,000 crashes, over 80,000 injuries occur annually in the United States because of drowsy driving. And statistics are showing that the deaths and accidents related to drowsy driving increase during the summer. In fact, according to this, it says drunk driving has now taken a back seat to drowsy driving as the casualty numbers continue to grow, affecting one in five accidents. That's crazy. One in five accidents, responsible for thousands of deaths, billions of dollars in damage every year. And statistics show that the deaths and accidents related to drowsy driving increase during the summer, but it's something that's a problem year-round.
And it's, but again, what the positive thing is, we can stop this. You know, we're not trying to find a cure. We're not trying to get money for research. It's done. We can stop this tomorrow, today. And it's a simple link. Isn't it interesting? So simple. Lingual nerve on your tongue, bodily reflex reflex action of adrenaline. How simple is that? It's as simple as the Heimlich maneuver.
I want our listeners to take this seriously. And I promise you, I'm in no way, shape, or form taking any money or payment to be on the show today talking with Anson Williams. This was important to me, so important I brought him on the Tom Bernard Show. I'll be visiting with him on Coast to Coast AM. We're bringing him on our show because I know that many of our listeners can be deeply and positively impacted by picking up the alert drops and driving safe. It's a great way to save your life and the lives of others. So even if you think you're under control, you know, and we've all met those guys that drunk drive or drink and drive, and they think they're fine. Well, you know what? You see the stats on that. But drowsy driving to you is something different. Listen, if I can give you something for around 10 bucks that you can keep with you in your car at all times and use just in case, isn't it worth it? I mean, you're going to piss away 10 bucks on something stupid anyway. Why not use that money to have something on hand to use in case of an emergency? And how many of you like me? I've got a college-age student, and my son is at Rose Holman College. He is pushing every day, and he studies and studies and studies. And he's in athletics programs. He's a cheerleader out there. He's in track and field, and he's doing studying, and he's doing remarkable. But it's taking its toll, and he's tired. And he was telling me about the amount of energy drinks that he has to rely on, and he doesn't like to put things in his body that are not healthy. This is something that we can all get behind because it's something that isn't addictive, right? There's no addictive properties at all in this.
No, no. There's four basic ingredients. There's citric acid, natural citric acid, natural sour lemon, water, and a bit of preservative for shelf life, and that's it. And by the way, each little sprayer is so concentrated, there's over 80 sprays per unit. So it lasts a long time.
And the best part, too, kids, free shipping. How about that? Free shipping on top of the purchase. And I think you've got the three packs available for like $19.99. It'll get you a three pack of them. So people can, you can have one. Yep. You can try it out with your team. You can try it out with your family members. And if you are a parent that has a child that's beginning to drive like I am next year, Linus, my son will be 16. If that's not terrifying enough, when we get his new car, he will be getting a brand new bottle of alert drops to have with him at all times. And if you've used any of the products you hear on the show, email me and tell me about your story. Show me a picture of your new vehicle with you next to it. Show me a picture of you with your bottle of alert drops. Show me your picture of you enjoying HelloFresh. I want to hear your stories, but especially with alert drops. I want people that are listening to the show to take me seriously on this point. And I think I pushed it through you enough to realize that I'm very serious about this. And I like to do what we can, as you've heard on the show, when we do our Halloween for Hunger campaign. We have our Christmas Angels program coming up. Any way we can do anything to better our world and help save lives, we like to be a part of this. And I'm more than happy to work with Anson in any way to keep promoting this. We'll have a link up for this on today's podcast so that you can actually hit the link and go in and get the information, or you can make your order today. And I'll tell you what. Go ahead, send those. If you do it, take a snapshot of your receipt of the finalized purchase. You can block out your credit card or whatever information you've got on there, but show me a receipt that you purchased it, and I will take those through next Friday. and I will do a random drawing with Tim. We'll print them out. We'll pull them, and whoever wins it will get a Darkness Radio prize pack. But show me that you purchased this. You heard me. You took it seriously, and overwhelm my email box at dave@darknessradio.com and show me that you're taking this serious and that you're going to try to make a difference in your life and others, and you will be entering you in for an opportunity to get a Darkness Radio prize pack. What does that conclude? We're going to have books in there. We'll have some cool equipment in there. I'll also have a blessed Benedictine medal for you that you can have. We'll have some really cool swag. So just go ahead and do that. So if you get the alert drops, take a picture of yourself with the alert drops or send me the copy of a receipt by next Friday at dave@darknessradio.com. We'll do a drawing and one of you lucky winners will get a Darkness Radio prize pack. Anson, this is kind of an interesting life you've led, right? Going from actor, singer, musician, behind the camera, life-saving guru. This has been a pretty good life, isn't it?
It has, but you know, to me, every day's new, and I've always been one to move forward. And again, it's just you go with your feelings. I feel a push in different areas, and when I don't listen to it, it's when I get in trouble. When I listen to it, it does. It puts you in all sorts of areas. But that's what's wonderful about life is the variety. And there's so many areas we all can contribute and we all can, feel successful, satisfied, So I've been very lucky, you know, basically starting from nothing like most of us and then being able to have these, wonderful experiences. Most important, a family, of course. But I just hope everyone out there is inspired because, don't let society stop you. Connect with yourself, connect with your feelings, move forward, trust that. We're all important and we all have something important to do. We all have something positive to do. We all count. That's a great point.
And you've used, talking about your mom's psychic abilities, you've talked about how it's hit you in some really dramatic ways, but let's face it, you've kind of utilized that ability throughout your entire life to make the decisions that you've had to put you in the places for the success that you've continued to have. And even with this alert drops, you realized there was this aha voice and you didn't just let it pass by. And I mean, I love how our listeners will write in with stories of their own, but how many times I hear from people on the road or in person that will tell me, gosh, I had this idea and I didn't do it and now somebody else has done it, or you've had these moments and we just look past them because you let the self-doubt and self-loathing win. And you can't. That's what separates, us from people that are very successful on TV or in music or in movies or in plays or authors. It's not just sitting back having the great idea. It's putting that act into motion. Truthfully, out of your life, Anson, all of the experiences in your life, how many times have they really kind of come to fruition because you followed that voice, that push that told you this is it?
So many, I don't know. I've always been an innate, entrepreneur. Even I created a printing business when I was 12 years old, a little printing business. But so many times, even when you're directing, say you're directing and you're writing or whatever, you get numerous, there's 8 ways to do something, but you get these, you just get this feeling and you go with it and it takes you in the right place. It's interesting. So you're using it when you don't even know you're using it. It's as simple as, like, if there's a mom out there, doing a recipe, what to put in, how to do it. All that's kind of psychic. All that's kind of that connection, that instinct that directs you. And that can happen in every area of your life, every day. But you got to connect with it. And you can't let the negativity get in your head of, I don't know anybody. I don't have any money. Oh, it'll never happen for me. No. Even just go forward. Just go. Even as ignorant, go forward. It will put you someplace. Honestly, even if it's not that one, it's going to put you someplace you wouldn't have been for something to happen. You are stopping. You're getting in the way of yourself. You're stopping yourself from destiny. Those feelings, that push is destiny. We're not accidents on this earth. We're no different than you put a seed in the ground and it grows and it knows exactly what to do. A puppy's born and knows exactly what to do. We're no different. We have destiny. All of us have destiny. We're not accidents. But it's so easy to disconnect from who we are at an early age. We're brainwashed into someone else telling us who to be. You got to find yourself, connect with yourself. You will be led in the right direction. We're not just thrown around to fend for ourselves. There is something powerful out there that will direct us, that will put you in the right place. We just got to stop getting in the way of ourselves. We got to stop shooting ourselves in the foot. We've got to connect back to who we are, what we're about, and trust those feelings. You know, feel that push. Go with it. Don't define it. Go with it. It will put you in the right place.
Anson Williams, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing now to help save lives. From entertaining us to saving lives, it's a remarkable world and a remarkable life, and I can't wait to see what you do next. Thank you for joining me today on the show.
Thank you so, so much.
It's been a pleasure. That's it for this week, kids. I hope you enjoyed it. We've got a whole new week, a whole new slate of great stories and experiences coming your way next week right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.